The night may be long and the dark may be deep, but the answers are there to be found. Whether it's the normal, the abnormal, or the paranormal, you're in the right place. Let's go beyond reality.
Sometimes it's the normal, sometimes it's the abnormal, and sometimes it's the paranormal. Welcome to Beyond Reality Radio. I'm your host, JV Johnson. Thanks for being here tonight. We've got a very interesting discussion lined up for you. We're going to be talking to Gordon Curl Smith. He's the author of a book called Revelation Antarctica, and we'll be talking about many, many facets of the paranormal as it relates to his book. And we'll bring him on in just a couple of moments. Don't forget, tomorrow night we've got Brian Clune and Bob Davis joining us. They're authors. We'll be discussing their new book, Ghosts and Legends of Alcatraz, as well as Frank Sumption's Ghost Boxes. So a lot of interesting paranormal discussion coming up tomorrow night, and we look forward to those conversations. Swing by our YouTube page. Give it a like. It is Beyond Reality Radio, or just search for JV Johnson. Very easy way to find it that way. We're going to go right to break. When we come back, we will bring in our guest, again, Gordon Curl Smith, tonight on Beyond Reality Radio.
Who loves horror movies? What about horror movies with homicidal clowns? And what about horror movies where a supernatural and malevolent undertaker turns the dead of the earth into dwarf zombies to be used as slaves? Then get to Scare-A-Con at the Rochester Riverside Hotel, October 18th through 20th. Celebrity guests including the Phantasm 40th Anniversary Cast Reunion and Hellraiser's Pinhead, Doug Bradley. Scare-A-Con, the ultimate horror and pop culture gathering. Get the full con schedule and discount tickets at scareacon.com.
But we're excited tonight because we've got a very special returning guest, actually. Tonight, our guest will be Gordon Curl Smith. Gordon has been on the program before. He's got a new book out called Revelation Antarctica. And in fact, the website is the same name, Revelation Antarctica. Gordon, welcome back to Beyond Reality Radio. It's an honor and a pleasure to have you here with us again.
Glad to be back with you. Yes, indeed.
So last time you were here, if memory serves me correctly, you were writing about helping, I think it was helping children with out-of-body experiences?
With past life.
Past lives, that's right. Now I remember. Exactly, yeah.
And it was all in. With a cute little penguin and a cute little penguin soul that went from one type of penguin to another, and worked its way up until finally he became an emperor.
That was a fascinating discussion. I remember it well now. How has it been received? Have you gotten a lot of feedback for that?
Yeah, but do you know that there are some people who are they're a little bit scared of it? They're afraid that you're going to open Pandora's box.
Well, in some kind of spiritual sense, do you mean, or just
yeah?
The people who are
interested in it are people who are aware of the phenomenon, and in many cases, people who actually have children who show unusual talents at a very early age. But when you start talking about it to people who are not tuned into this at all, they really are afraid that something awful is going to happen, and they sort of shy away from it. So it's maybe its time is not quite yet here, but for those who like it, they really like it. But as I say, quite a number of people are a tiny bit unsure.
Well, you have a new book. Has the new book been released yet, or is it about to be released?
No, it is really. It actually came up on Amazon yesterday.
Oh.
The day before. So it's brand new, brand spanking new, and both the printed version and the Kindle are available.
Perfect timing then. The title is called Revelation Antarctica. Why is this book unique?
Well, first of all, it's a follow-on from a book that I wrote before called Genesis Antarctica, which told the story of the discovery of urns under the Antarctic ice containing documents which proved the reality of a civilization that predated all others. And it was written in a certain way so that you were never really sure if it was true or not, because there were the stories transcribed from the so-called documents, and it was backed up by articles from newspapers, interviews with scientists, and all sorts of things. So you, it was all a little bit vague as to whether it was real or whether it wasn't real. And following on from that, then we now have Revelation Antarctica, which brings things together and goes even further in doing something different, which I guess you saw that it's got all sorts of entrances and exits, this book.
Yeah, which is a rather unique approach to probably writing, but certainly a unique approach to reading. Is this something that people are going to be able to just decide for themselves where to jump in and where to jump out?
Yeah, I think that most people will initially read it from beginning to end. Maybe I should perhaps explain that it consists of 99 chapters. I call them items. There are 99 of these, and they cover 12 or so different types of story. Some of them are stories of quite ordinary people. Another one is a very extraordinary person who's a medium. And these chapters are interrelated to each other, but you're never quite sure to what degree. So if you read the story from beginning to end, okay, you get tied up in a particular story. For example, at the beginning, one of the things that happens at the beginning is there is a new movie called Star Peace. And what happens at the premiere of Star Peace is that in cinemas or over cinemas all over Britain and the States and in Johannesburg and loads of places, when the people come out from the first night of this movie, they discover that there's a UFO hovering over the cinema. And of course they think it's a publicity stunt. And the people who, well, what is it, the filmmakers, the corporation that makes the movie, are told by the CIA and people like that to say that it is them who's doing it, whereas in fact it isn't. and then okay, you finish that story, and then you go on and you discover that a young boy who is waking up in the moonlight and is obviously having past life memories. And then you go on to something else. What next is there? There's a NORAD briefing. There's,
now, as you're listing these topics, mm-hmm. or these ideas, these are these each individual chapters, one each of the 99 that you referenced?
Yeah, that's it. Yes, and each one is maybe 2 or 3 pages, a meeting in the Oval Office of the White House, which actually is 6 pages. That's the longest.
And you, these stories have a thread through them, but they can be read in any sequence, right?
Right. Well, there are 12 threads. There are actually 12 different threads, and they can be read in any order or sequentially.
Now, I don't know if any other work any other written work has been presented this way. Is this a new concept altogether?
As far as I know, I've looked around. There are one or two children's books, sort of the Jimmy the Rabbit. You can decide if Jimmy the Rabbit is going to school today or if he isn't. You know, things like this.
Yeah. So in something like that, I'm trying to remember what the name. You probably know, Gordon, what the name is. But there's where you can actually make decisions that affect the story along the way. Does that happen in your book, or is it a different type of random approach?
No, it's a different type of random approach.
Yeah.
Because the idea behind all this is to say that all reality is happening at the same time. There's no such thing as time, and everything unfolds according to or according to the way we approach it. And so this in some cases, like, for example, the UFOs over the cinemas, which end up going to Antarctica and burning a hole, well, burning and melting a huge hole in the ice. For example, there are two versions of that. In one version, they arrive in Antarctica and blast immediately a 2 mile deep hole, which is where they discover the ruins of the civilization, which was in the first book. And then there's another version whereby they hang around for a couple of weeks before they start blasting. And the idea is so that you understand that nothing is finite. Everything is in flux. Everything happens at the same time, which is why one can read the 99 items in whatever order one likes.
Okay, so the obvious question, Gordon, next is, where did you come up with this concept?
I don't know. I suppose you had a quick look at the article I sent you.
Yes.
The whole thing came together in a rather strange way, because it was in May 2018 when I looked out of the kitchen window and I saw Venus in the sky. And there was this sort of boom. I thought, what was that? And it seemed, I felt that something had been delivered. You know, you've got mail, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
And there were several ideas. And at the time, actually, I was still working on the Penguins. And I thought, hey, guys, or whoever, give me a break. I want to finish the Penguins. But anyway, I did work on it a while and got a few chapters done, and then waited for the Penguins to be finished, and then came back to it in October last year. And like I'd always done, I would write at various times of day, et cetera, and very often in the evening, which is not the best time to do it, but anyway. And what happened there was one morning, I woke up at 5 o'clock in the morning with a sort of idea, get onto your laptop and get going, you know, and I did. And it was like that every morning for about 9 months, almost without any change. I mean, every morning, not always exactly at the same time, but very often I thought, hey, I'm going to develop that particular storyline, and it wasn't like that. I mean, once I started typing, it sort of flowed, but it was about something else. But this is not, you know, and it's important, obviously. I think it's important to say this is not automatic writing. I'm not sort of in a trance and going, oh, I can hear
right,
the voices.
Right.
But it was extremely pragmatic. And the ideas were coming from somewhere. And my experience of working with words for 50 years was doing the heavy lifting, actually. So you know, there was the initial idea, wherever it comes from. And then there was the nuts and bolts of putting it all together. And it was, as I saw the diversity of the subjects, I realized that, as you said, this is something that apparently nobody's done before.
Gordon, I want to go back to this idea that the ideas in the book came to you. We kind of call that channeling. I think you've referenced that. You said it was a sort of channeling. Again, describe to us how it started, because we got kind of rushed in that last segment, but how it started, how these ideas started to come to you, and what you were thinking as they were arriving. Were you confused by the fact that you were getting these ideas, or did it seem natural to you?
Well, it kind of seemed natural. I mean, the first lot that came in when I saw Venus and there was this sort of little capsule, that was one thing. But when I got onto the process of being awakened or waking at any time between 4 and 6 in the morning and then writing an item, that seemed to be perfectly natural. And the initial idea came, but in I would say 60 or 70% of cases, I knew how it started, but I didn't know how it was going to end. And but it just flowed along. And but what was even more fascinating was that we have these 12 storylines. And when I started getting towards the end, when I'd done about 60 items, for some reason, the idea was right from the outset that there should be 99 of these items. But when I was getting up to about the 50s and the 60s, I started to see how they related to each other. And okay, there was a little bit of adjusting to do, but not that much. And it was surprising how everything fitted together. And really, I hadn't planned it that way. I think if I'd set out to plan a book like this from the word go, I think it would be impossible. I think it's a book. It was a book that had to build itself, and then I had to come in and tighten a few nuts and bolts and tighten up a paragraph here and there, and bring it all together. So it did seem a very natural process, and a very intense process, right, as well.
Right. As these ideas were coming to you and you were working them into the final product, which is the book, and then you had a chance to look back at it, did you determine if the source was within you, was coming from somewhere within you or somewhere else? Did you ever even give that any thought, or were you just thankful it came?
Well, I was certainly thankful it came. It did. I mean, the actual ideas, shall I say, they blossomed. So whether they were coming from inside or outside, I don't know. But they just blossomed, and then I just worked on them to get them into a good form. That's all I can say.
Yeah. The book covers some very, very interesting and certainly involved topics that weave throughout the stories that you present in the book itself. You know, about the moon, about reptilians, about angels, about as you said, UFOs, about underground civilizations. I mean, there's some very, very interesting concepts here. Did any of this information, as you were writing it, as it was coming to you, seem to you to be advanced information, maybe information that you didn't necessarily think you possessed, and it may have had an exterior source?
Oh yeah, I mean, yes. And what sort of gives that credence is that there are a number of people who are very much into the esoteric and stuff, and they said, you know, this is really sort of weapons grade revelations.
Yeah, yeah. And did you realize it as it was happening?
Well, I don't know. I was just doing the job, you know. but I was very excited about it, and I realized that the way, as I say, the way everything slotted together was so invigorating. One day I was heading out towards the supermarket, and suddenly this phrase came into my mind, which said, imagination. Now, what is it again? Let me make sure. Imagination is the most powerful force in the universe. And I declaimed that. And then I thought, have I heard that before? And of course, it was our dear friend Albert Einstein. But it just hit me. But it's kind of the slogan for the book. Because imagination is something that links us with all creative forces. If you've got an imagination, then you are going to be creative, and you're going to be in greater harmony with the universe.
And as this book was being written, and as this inspiration was coming to you, you didn't recognize that it was all going to fit together as nicely as it does. You couldn't really see the forest through the trees at the time until it was complete.
Well, no, up until when I'd done about, as I said, I'd done about 50 or 60. I know I'd say about 60, and because then there were enough episodes of the various storylines which could be built together. And so it was at about that point that I started readjusting. And a very important thing is that in between these stories, there are 18 items which really go into the depths of stuff. Like one of them is called quantum interpretations, or there's a young girl who does a thesis on a master's. She does a master's in matrix studies. And then we get an article about creativity and spirituality. So there is some, shall we say, pure philosophy in with the UFOs and the OVNI, with the UFOs and the mediums and all the rest of it.
If you were to hand someone the book and they said, "Should I start at the beginning and just read through, or should I do something else?" How would you advise them? Would you say start anywhere you like, or is there a preferred way to read this?
Well, you know, I rather think most people initially will read it from beginning to end.
Right.
But so far we've had quite a few people who've gone back on it and read it again, but at random, and they got even more out of it. But there are different ways of determining how to read these items. So, okay, there's the one where you start at the beginning and go on to the end, and then you've got a one where you follow the storylines. And in the book, there are all the numbers. So if you want to have the story about the UFOs, then you read, there's a list. It tells you you must read items 4, 9, 15, 24, 28, 60, etc. And so there you will have the stories separately. So that's another way of having a go at it. And then you can do what we call pick and mix. So you just flip through and see what inspires you. And this can bring up some interesting things. But the gold standard is to actually do it at random. And the book gives you information as to how you can create a sequence of 99 items at total random. There's you can go onto a computer site, onto a website, and get a completely random a number generated by a computer, and you follow that, and there it starts getting interesting, because you might sort of start off at the end, and then there was one friend who read it backwards, actually found that was quite interesting, and so you can have this complete random. Now, as you might have seen, that the number of possible permutations with 99 items is absolutely mind-boggling. There's so many hundreds of thousands, or so many million, followed by about 50 zeros.
Yeah, that was a number that I couldn't even. I don't know what the name of that number is. There were so many zeros.
It's godzillions. No, I mean it goes beyond the billions, obviously, and the quadrillions and all the rest of it. Yeah. I mean, these are words that have absolutely no meaning to us, because you know, you're not going to have that. You're not going to have to talk about that with your banker, probably.
And if you read it, say you read the book start to finish the first time, then you go back and you read it in a random way. Maybe you go to the website and get the computer generated sequence. Is it going to leave a different impression on you?
I think so. In particular, a couple of friends who have done that, yes, they found it much more profound, because as several of the stories are real sort of cliffhangers. Then you want to know what's going to come next, and then in the normal order of things, you've got an article about something completely different. So it is something that if you go back, you'll get more out of it.
Just a quick reminder, if you watch the program or listen to the program on our YouTube stream, you get to see some interesting facts, figures, videos, information, some nostalgia, some cutesy stuff, whatever it happens to be that our assistant producer Orion has in store for you during the breaks. Kind of fun to do that. We like to offer some of the obscure and in some cases maybe even never seen before stuff, at least not by many of us. So check out the YouTube page. It's JV Johnson. If you go to YouTube, just search it. JV Johnson or even Beyond Reality Radio, either one. You'll find it and subscribe. We'd love to have you as part of our group there as well. And also thank you to all the great radio stations that carry the program around the country. That list grows continuously, and we welcome you all to the Beyond Reality Radio family. Gordon, I want to bring up a concept that might need a little bit of explanation, but it kind of forms the foundation of a lot of the work that you've done. And that's meta-realism or meta-realism. Tell us what that is.
Yeah, meta-realism was initially the name of a movement of painting in the Netherlands. And because in another life, but I mean in this life, I was an artist. And I painted sort of surrealistic and symbolic paintings. And then I met an artist called Joffre Boschart, in the 1980s. And he painted like Dali. And I thought, when I saw that, I thought, forget it. You know, I should have to get sort of 15 years of art school to paint like him. And it was at that moment that I decided that I was going to paint with words instead of paint, and I wanted to create the same kind of meta-realism as he created in his paintings. Meta-realism in works like Dali as well, to a degree. They may be weird, they may be strange, they may be this, that, or the other, but because they are so well painted, you can't say that they don't exist. And so, what I wanted to do the same thing with words, and that was the reason why I called the first book Genesis Antarctica a meta-realist legend. And so that has sort of followed on into the new book, except that here it's much. You are aware that it's. That it's fiction, or at least you suppose. Yes, well, a lot of it, you know, is fiction, but it's symbolic fiction, and the articles that I mentioned that are rather more serious are something which give a whole twist, a different twist to the whole story. You realize that it isn't just a story; that it is highly symbolic, and it can trigger reactions in people's minds that sparks their imagination. And as imagination is such an important thing, it means that this book is a tool to open up their imagination and get them going on the journey towards ultimately enlightenment.
On the other side of our top of the hour break, we're going to get into some more details of the stories in the book. But before we do that, we only have about a minute here. Where can people get a hold of the book? And I know you mentioned it earlier in the program, but mention it again and find out more information about all of your work, in fact.
Yeah, I mean, there is the new book, the Kindle version and the printed version, the paperback, are on Amazon, and they've been on there since yesterday or the day before, so it's hot off the press. And so you can pick them up there, and the other books as well. So that's basically where one can go.
And the website has a bunch of videos on it, which offer some insight into the book as well.
Yeah. This is revelation-antarctica.com. It isn't its final version, I must say. But anyway, there is a clip to give you an idea of what it's about, and it gives you some of the background. So it's It's a good start, but we've still got some things to add to that.
Great show underway with Gordon Curl-Smith. We'll continue our conversation with him in just a moment. Looking ahead, tomorrow night we've got Brian Clune and Bob Davis with us, authors of a book called Ghosts and Legends of Alcatraz. And we're also going to talk about the Ghost Box. That's an invention of Frank Sumption, and it's a device that some paranormal investigators say helps them communicate with the other side. We'll find out what that's all about and how it works, and we'll find out more about Alcatraz as well in tomorrow night's conversation. Remember that Friday night is always a best of show here on Beyond Reality Radio. And then next week on Monday night, we've got Melissa Tittle, who will be with us. She's the director of original content for the Gaia streaming service, and she's produced a documentary called Unearthing Nazca, The Complete Story, about mysterious mummies that have been unearthed in Nazca, Peru. That'll be a fascinating conversation on Monday night's show. Be sure to join us for that. If you listen to the program as a downloadable podcast, please rate it for us and share it with your friends. If you catch the show on the YouTube channel, do the same thing. Send it, share it, whatever you need to do. We want to bring more people to our group and to the program. Once again, we're talking tonight with Gordon Curl-Smith, and his book is called Revelation Antarctica. And I want to kind of get into some of these stories specifically, Gordon, because you have a lot of ideas that you explore throughout the course of the book. Let's talk about this idea of the moon and the fact that the moon may not be what we think it is.
Well, this is one of the most fascinating things because a lot of people have already told us that the moon shouldn't be there. It's too big, it's too light, and I think most people have probably heard about what happened when they sent a part of the landing gear, the landing capsule, back down onto the moon when one of the Apollo mission was leaving, and the moon smashed into the surface of the moon, it resonated like a bell.
Like a bell,
Like for 40 minutes. Doing, 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 doing. I mean, you know, if that doesn't sort of start getting people asking a few questions, I don't know what would. And also the fact that the moon is absolutely the right size to cover up the sun when there's an eclipse. The chances of that being in that place with all that is so incredible. The odds are even longer than the number of different permutations you can have of reading the book. So really, I mean, the moon absolutely is artificial. And what happens in the book is that the moon starts to rotate, or it speeds up its rotation, because of course, as we know, it rotates as it goes around the Earth, but we only see one side of it. Well, in the book, we see that the moon starts to rotate faster so that the back side of the moon comes and faces to the Earth. And what happens is that all the flux of the matrix energy, which is directed to the Earth and which dumbs us all down, that declines. And so there are 3 or 4 days, for example, and in the story, there are 3 or 4 days when there is absolutely no influence from the matrix. And so people start waking up. And not only do people start waking up, but the people among us who are reptilians, their eyes suddenly become reptilian, and they have to go around with dark glasses on all the time during that period. They're not sunglasses, they're moon glasses. And so this gives you an idea of how the different stories sort of spin together.
As you were writing this, and as you were considering these ideas, how much had you considered them prior to putting them into this form? For example, this whole idea that the moon is artificial, it's not a natural body. Had you thought about that a lot prior to writing this book?
Oh, sure. I mean, and there is a very famous book, and there is in fact a on one of the one of the one of the shots of a so-called website, you actually see the book. So there are very well documented items that you can find.
Yeah, no, we've actually had folks on the program that have talked about this. It's a theory that has been circulated and discussed at some length. I'm just curious about you personally. Is it something that you had paid attention to prior to writing the book?
I mean, I knew about it. I knew about it, but and so I can't say that that came to me. But it seemed to fit in so well.
Yeah.
And of course, the idea of the moon rotating, well, that is something new.
Right.
And the idea of what effect that would have with the matrix waxing and waning, obviously, is fascinating if we start thinking what that would lead to.
It's very fascinating. And I want to go back to something that you said early on in our discussion. You talked about one of the ideas in the book about a film called, I think it was called Space Peace. And Star Peace. That's right. And the fact that there was actually some alien involvement in this. Once again, go back to that and give us a bit of an idea of what this is about.
Well, the movie was a follow-on from obviously Star Wars, but there's a mention of a new franchise and all this kind of thing. And so when there is the premiere, there are these UFOs over all the cinemas, and they just stay there for as long as the movie is being screened. So after about
over all the theaters that are showing the film.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so this means that people get used to the idea. Of course, everybody thinks that it's a publicity stunt, but when the movie finally gets pulled, then all the UFOs head off for Antarctica. And we realize that it's rather beyond the remit of a movie company, of movie producers. And so they go to Antarctica and they blast this 2-mile deep hole in the ice and reveal the ruins of Zandanatis, which was the city that was mentioned in the civilization that was in Genesis Antarctica.
Gordon, I want to talk about time. You mentioned earlier in our discussion that time is explored differently in this book. Explain it. You say there's no time?
Yeah. Well, time is an illusion. There are a lot of people who are talking about this subject.
That's right.
And I find it absolutely fascinating in that we only experience time that passes when we are incarnated on Earth. But everywhere else, it's just very much a flux. So this was something that I felt was important to get across, the idea of there being no time. And on the book's cover, as you will have seen, there is a broken clock face, which is sending a very powerful message to say that there is no time here. And so I think that if we had a better perception, a better understanding of the fact that time is an illusion, it's a philosophical point, obviously, for us who live time going by, who live with it going by. But still, it's interesting to contemplate, and I think to apply, well, I don't know about apply it to our lives, but anyway, the bigger picture is that time is something in which time does not have much of a role to play. It's only when we're down here that we're subject to it.
And does the book present the individual stories or threads as happening simultaneously?
Without time? That is not said explicitly.
Okay.
But one can kind of deduce that. No, there are some sequences. For example, there are disclosures from a being known as Eilaguel, who is a reptilian angel, And but he is the intermediary between the no time dimension and the dimension on Earth. And but he does give five disclosures to a sort of a committee or some people who are listening to him. And it's obvious that there is one after the other. He has to play the rules of time passing. However, one will notice that everything he says, he only uses the present tense. He never uses the future. He never uses the past. So this is a little quirk that gives you a hint that there's something not quite as we find it.
You mentioned it, so I'm going to have to ask you about it. Reptilian angels. Now, you mentioned reptilians when you were talking about the moon and the Matrix. Yes. But reptilian angels, what are we talking about here?
Well, we are talking about the dark forces and the forces of light, and we're kind of intimating that actually they're all the same, because the darkness will generate light because we will be seeking for it. So it doesn't mean that there is actual evil, but there is an opposite of light. And this is something which we have to experience to get both sides of the story. The story of the book, and also our life story or our multiple incarnation story.
When you talk about reptilians in the context of the book, as you did again when we were talking about the moon and just now, are these the reptilians that many people might reference as an extraterrestrial race?
Oh, sure. And they're shape-shifting, so they can actually appear as one wants them to appear, or as they want themselves to be perceived. And in the first book, they are flying chariots drawn by horses with wings. But we also see in the new book that they are responsible for apparently negative things, but from negative things there are born wonderful stories of valor and value. So one might say that the darkness gives us an opportunity to shine.
When someone reads the book, do they need a knowledge of some of these concepts ahead of time, or is it presented in a way that they don't need that that information going into it?
No. The thing is that in the book there are some experts, and there are also some people who are very, shall we say, ordinary. There's Maeve and Dave, and these are a couple of people who live in a town in the middle of England, and they realize that something's funny is happening, because he likes to look at he's got a telescope, and he realizes that the moon is turning, and he tells his wife, Mavis, you know, and she says, oh, what you're talking about, you know, don't be so silly. And anyway, they realize that there is something going on, and they actually get recruited for a seminar in Scotland. And they go to this castle in Scotland, and they meet up with all the other characters that we've met in the book. And so they have their, just to show that their position, which they don't have any spiritual background really, or none at all, they're just honest, good folk, but they are also exposed to some of these philosophical ideas that are being put forward. And so they too are being enlightened and for the stage for which they're ready. So this gives an idea of how it can influence different people, and that you don't need to be a great philosopher to get something out of the book.
When you read the book, do you come away with any, I guess I'll use the word answers to any of these, what we would consider to be deep questions that you present?
There's no definite answer to any of these questions. We all
Right.
have our own answers, but hopefully it might encourage people to go and find what answers they need.
Gordon, you're in where? You're France, right?
Living in France, yeah, the south of France.
So it's early for you in the morning. Thank you so much for getting up for this.
Oh, it's a pleasure. It's a pleasure. There's one point I think perhaps it would be important to mention is the fact that the book, it's not just text. It's not just pages and pages of text. There are about 180 illustrations. There are also newspaper articles. And there are even web pages. You have to turn the book around if you've got the paper back, so that you can read it as if you were reading a web page. So this is the idea of all this is to create a sort of a parallel reality because it looks convincing, or at least I hope it does.
I was going to ask you: do you still paint and draw and practice some of the other art?
No.
It's all words for you now.
It's all words now. But there's no doubt that having had that visual background, that's why I'm tempted to have visuals in the book. And because these days we never see illustrations in books, or well, very very rarely, unless they're on sort of how to decorate your home or something. But I mean novels or books of philosophy, you might get the odd diagram, a sketch, or a graph or something, but you don't have pictures or images which help the story along, because it can save doing a long description. After all, a picture is worth 1,000 words. If we didn't have the pictures, it would be about 800 pages thick.
I think we have time for one more of the ideas, concepts that you present in the book that make it so fascinating, and that's the one of frozen souls. What's the frozen souls discussion about?
Okay, now the frozen, yeah, that's, this is this this was not anything that we've heard anywhere else, but the frozen souls. It's important that when the Zandanatis civilization was abandoned because Antarctica was going south and getting cold. The reptilian angels took them off to what would become Atlantis and Mu and everything. But there were a number of souls who were not incarnated, and they didn't know where to go. So they stayed among the ruins of what became the ruins of Zandanatis, and it all got covered by ice. Now, when the UFOs come and blast their 2-mile deep hole in the ice, these souls get liberated, and they start being born into bodies all over the world. And the strange thing that happens is that just before the baby is born, the spirit of the frozen soul enters the body, and the mum and the child go sort of virtually blue with cold. And the first few times it happened, I mean, you can imagine that all the maternity clinics were just didn't understand what was going on. But they discovered that after a few hours, or even an hour and a half, everything came back to normal. But those souls are souls from Zandanatis, and they are going to bring about a revolution in the human race. That's the
when you somebody reads the book, what do you want them to walk away with? What type of message do you want them to receive, and what type of feeling do you want them to have, other than just obviously enjoying it?
Yeah, just that the importance of imagination. What I really want to do is to spark imagination, because as our dear friend Albert Einstein said, you know, it is something which is so important. If you have imagination, you have creative possibilities, and creation is the energy of the universe. So the idea is to help people wake up a bit and perhaps be stimulated to be imaginative as well. That's the idea. Having an imagination means you are also creative. And once you're on that path, you are among the gods.
Tell me more about the random generator computer that folks can access. I'm assuming it's a website or a web access kind of thing, which can help them determine a random way to read the book.
Yes, indeed. There are also a dozen or so ready-made random sequences if people don't want to do that. But yes, you can go and get yourself your very own permutation and just see where it takes you. And of course, there are going to be the first 10 items that you read. You're going to be lost because it'll probably be in 5 or 6 different stories. But the more you read, the more things come together and you begin to see the whole picture. And it's quite an interesting experience. And you know, in a way, you know, you get two books for the price of one. You read it first all the way through, and then you read it this other way. You will see it in a whole different light.
You are always creative, always working, always got something in mind. What's next on your plate?
Uh-huh. Actually, I've got one or two ideas, but I'm not yet ready to say what they are because I really haven't worked it out yet because right. Everything is of course on the launch. But there are ideas floating around, and at the right time the something will arrive.
Once again, we're out of time here, but tell me where people can get the book. I know we've covered it, but I want to hear it again and where people can continue to follow your work.
Sure. Okay. Well, yeah, you can get it on Amazon or all over the world. And you just go to Amazon and just enter Revelation Antarctica, and you'll find there is the paperback available and the Kindle. Ultimately, we're planning also on doing an audiobook version, and our website revelationantarctica.com, where you will see a bit of background. And this is an ongoing site, so you can, if you come back in a few weeks, there will be more there. But there's already quite a bit to give you an idea.
I forgot to ask this, and I wanted to ask it before we left. And you may have mentioned it earlier in the discussion, but the title itself, where did that come from?
Well, it was, the first book was called Genesis Antarctica.
That's right.
So, and Genesis is, of course, the first book in the Bible, and Revelation is the last book in the Bible. So this is sending a sort of a subliminal message, or perhaps not so subliminal, but let's say that it is taking us on a journey which has some spiritual resonance, and it's also about revealing secrets and maybe things which appear strange, but the idea is, though, for people to experience a revelation within themselves and get their own energy, to get their own creativity going. That's what I would love to see happen.
Once again, the name of the book is Revelation Antarctica, and you can get it in all those places that Gordon just told us about. Amazon is probably the easiest. Gordon, again, thank you so much for being here. It's always a great conversation. We love having you on the program. Look forward to the next time you're with us.
Pleasure. Thank you.
Okay, so a little bit of fun here as we wind up the night. That Thumbrella product by Krapko, by the way, was a brainchild after I'd actually burned my thumb grabbing potatoes out of the microwave.
Well, they're called really hot potatoes for a reason.
Well, they weren't hot when they went in the microwave. I guess I should have thought about it a little bit more. Hey, there's something I wanted to talk about. I meant to do it earlier, but we had those internet issues, which kind of messed things up in the beginning of the show. But there's a news story out that NASA is planning more Mars exploration, which is kind of cool in itself. But one of the NASA scientists, Jim Green, doesn't believe that the public will be able to handle the idea that life exists or once existed on Mars if it turns out to be so. Mm. In fact, the scientist Jim Green says it'll be revolutionary. It'll start a whole new line of thinking, and I don't think we're prepared for the results, according to Green. Now, in 2020, NASA's Mars rover, which will launch, I think, next July, will be the first to collect samples of Martian materials and send them back to Earth. It's called the ExoMars rover.
And it's actually going to drill into Mars's crust. And since the surface of Mars is believed to be radioactive, any life that would or did exist on Mars would most likely be below ground, which is particularly of interest now because another news story recently announced that researchers had found new life forms on Earth after drilling deep into the Earth's crust. They drilled into some caverns where there certainly should not have been, or at least where it wasn't expected to be any life, and they found new life forms there. So it raises the possibility that they may find the same thing on Mars. Pretty interesting idea.
Yeah. Well, are either of these crusts cheese stuffed? That's what I want to know.
Yeah, see, they're not. And that's why I don't have a whole lot of interest in them at this hour of the night. But another thing, we've been talking about exorcisms on this program because we've got some guests coming up that might be talking about the topic. Well, a six-year-old boy has died after his father made him swallow hot water from a bathtub as part of an attempted exorcism in Arizona.
Hmm.
Pablo Martinez told police he was trying to cast out a demon and help the boy, and he held him underwater for about 5 minutes.
Oh.
Martinez said he had seen a demon inside the boy and wanted to get it out. He has been arrested.
Oh, no.
I'm not sure where the problem lied there, if the boy had something going on with him or the father did.
Right.
Researchers have also, this is good news actually, researchers have developed an artificial blood that can actually be used for all blood types and has no adverse side effects. Hmm. This is a major breakthrough because not only will it offer a new supply of life-saving blood, but this particular artificial blood can be stored at normal temperatures for up to a year.
Hmm.
Currently, if you give blood, the blood only has a shelf life of about 28 days, and it has to be kept and refrigerated. So it makes it very, very difficult to use in remote parts of the world. So this is a real breakthrough.
And in fact, you know, in a time of crisis, when people give blood and there ends up being a surplus that can't be used, I mean, that would eliminate several problems: too much blood and not enough blood.
We'll see you tomorrow.
Beyond Reality Radio is hosted by Jason Hawes and JV Johnson and produced by Alexandria Johnson and Slick Eddie Edwards for Entercom Radio. Beyond Reality Radio is distributed by Westwood One Radio Networks. Stop by our Facebook page and say hello. Follow the hosts on Facebook as well. For Jason Hawes, follow at jasonhawes.taps. For JV Johnson, follow at jvjparanormal. If you'd like to be a guest on Beyond Reality Radio or you have a suggestion for a guest, contact Slick Eddie Edwards at slickeddieedwards@gmail.com. Be sure to visit our chat room as well at beyondrealityradio.com. Thanks for listening.